This program contains explicit content and subject matter which may be unsuitable for some listeners. Discretion is advised. Sex Out Loud is brought to you by Good Vibrations, creating a buzz since 1977.
Smart. Sexy. Kinky. Fun.
Welcome to Sex Out Loud with your host, sex educator, author, and filmmaker, Tristan Taramino. It's sex-positive radio like you've never heard before. Tristan talks about sexuality from every angle with leading authors, experts, artists, and icons. From sex education and sexual politics to BDSM and non-monogamy, nothing is off limits. So get ready to open your mind and expand your horizons. This is Sex Out Loud. And now here's your host, Tristan Taramino.
Welcome to Sex Out Loud, everyone. Today's show is all about kink, and we are going to be talking about it with an expert and a veteran in the world of BDSM. But first, I just wanted to give you some updates, some important events coming up, things that may be of interest to you. If you are in the New York City area, October 14th at 6:30 p.m., there will be a talk called Taking Offense, Trigger Warnings, and the Neoliberal Politics of Endangerment with Jack Halberstam, Lisa Dugan, Tavia Nyong'o, and many more people, and that's happening at NYU. It should be really incredible given, you know, the discussions about this online. I think in person it's going to be pretty powerful. Also, I'm going to be lecturing at Kent State University in Kent, Ohio on October 27th, and I'm going to put details about that on my website, on my tour page at puckerup.com. Catalyst Con is coming up. Catalyst Con is happening next year, March 27th to the 29th, 2015, on the East Coast in the Washington, D.C. area. And their call for submissions to present is up right now, and the deadline is November 4th. Also in November, Pornotopia's 2014 Film Festival in Albuquerque, New Mexico. This is the Southwest's only ethical porn film festival, and it's produced by Self Serve Toys, and you can find out more information at selfservetoys.com. And then finally, you have just a few more days to take advantage of my biggest sale of the year at puckerup.com. It's a back-to-school sale, and now through October 15th, you can get 50% off all of my sex ed movies, every single instructional movie I've ever made. Use coupon code SCHOOLME, S-C-H-O-O-L-M-E, all one word, at checkout. And I want to remind you that we're live today, so you can talk to me and my guest. You can ask us questions. You can make comments on what we're talking about. Give us a call at 866-472-5788, 866-472-5788. If you're shy, you can also post questions on Twitter at Sex Out Loud Radio. Remember, if you call and get on the air, or if I read your question on the air, one that you've sent to us, you are going to win a prize from Sport Sheets, which seems especially fitting for today's topic. Okay, let me tell you about my guest. Dr. Morgana May is a San Francisco-based professional dominant counselor and human sexuality consultant. She teaches people how to fully express their kinky desires without shame and empowers them with the language and skills necessary to negotiate loving and lasting kink-positive relationships. Dr. May is the owner of Maison de la Maîtresse, which is how you say it in French, San Francisco's premier boutique dungeon. She has a master's degree and a doctorate in clinical psychology with a postdoctoral specialty in forensics and working with sexual behavior problems. Her writing has appeared in Best American Erotica, Politically Inspired, and Sex for America. And she is the writer and host of the instructional video, Whip Smart, A Good Vibrations Guide to Beginning SM. Welcome to Sex Out Loud, Morgana.
Thanks so much for having me, Tristan.
So I thought we might start out with like a vocab refresher lesson, because we're going to be talking about BDSM and I want everyone to kind of be on the same page and not get sort of stuck in the jargon.
Yep.
Plus, I always love to hear people like kind of go back to the basics and hear their definitions of basic BDSM terms.
You bet. Well, and especially because so much of the language we use in kink is really overdetermined, right? So we can have these kind of mild consensuses about what the words mean, but then I always want to go through a secondary. So what does being a top mean to you? Because we all invest the words with so much of our personal meaning as well.
Definitely. And I always want to say, like, this is a broad definition of the word, because these words have complex meaning for everyone, but we're going to sort of broadly define them.
Definitely. Everyone will be able to read a personal ad more successfully after this. Go.
Good. Okay. So let's start with top and bottom.
Mm-hmm. I often think of top and bottom as describing the sort of role or position a person occupies in a kinky scene. So a top is the person who's doing the action, kind of driving the scene, and a bottom is the person who's receiving the action. We often think about dominant and submissive as being the kind of power exchange components of this.
Mm-hmm. Okay, now you said scene, so tell me what a scene is.
A scene is our kind of jargon for a play date, for the kind of period of time in which we're engaging in a purposeful, kinky exchange.
And tell me about dominant and submissive.
This is one of those places where I invest a little of my own meaning in this. So I like to think of dominant and submissive as being similar to top and bottom, but a little more psychologically oriented. So a dominant is a person who derives a lot of their sort of erotic enjoyment or their lifestyle orientation from being in a position of power and control. And a submissive similarly experiences that sense of pleasure, that sense of catharsis from relinquishing power and control.
Okay, and how about sadist and masochist?
I love these terms. I love these terms in particular because from my own background, these are terms that have some fairly pathological origins, but that we make a very positive sort of space for in consensual kink communities. So a sadist, the way I like to describe it, is a person who derives erotic or sexual or sensual pleasure from providing intense sensation for their partner. So that could be something like intense pain, but that can also be the sort of intense physical touch, right? And we like to differentiate the kind of sadistic pain we're talking about here from actual abuse. And then a masochist is a person who derives erotic pleasure, sensual pleasure, sexual pleasure from receiving intense physical sensation, from receiving pain. And again, we're contextualizing the pain. I don't know many people who got sort of hard or wet when they slammed their finger in the door. It's not a kind of like any kind of pain will do, but the very sort of purposeful consensual exchange of it.
Now, you brought up some of this sort of psychological charge to these last two terms. And I'm interested because I know that you speak to psychology professionals about addressing kink in a therapeutic setting. Tell me some of the questions that those audiences ask you most often.
Well, that's a great question. I mean, I would say that the biggest concern that those audiences will have for me is how do I differentiate among my clientele people who are engaged in consensual sadomasochism from people who are in abusive relationships? That's the kind of the crux of it. And then the secondary question I'll often get is this kind of origins question. What makes these people kinky? Which is, of course, a question we only ask of kinky people. We never ask people to define the origins of their vanilla sexuality in the same way that we don't ask people when they first knew they were straight. It's a very kind of special question that we only ask folks that are one or two standard deviations off the norm.
And in your opinion, do you feel like we have made some progress in terms of there being more, quote, kink aware therapy providers, psychologists, psychiatrists? I know you're in San Francisco, which is a sort, you know, that's a very particular place, but do you think that there are more resources for people?
I definitely do. And yes, I am kind of working within Glenda's bubble here. So folks who live in San Francisco are often drawn to being both either in these communities or advocates for these communities. But when I go into clinical training programs, when I work with interns, I am consistently heartened and excited and blown away by the degree of sex positivity that folks are coming into graduate programs with. Also, the number of folks going into programs who themselves are queer or poly or kinky themselves, right? So they're bringing a personal community experience and that desire for advocacy into their work.
Now, in the work that you do with individuals and with couples, I think some people would assume that you or call you a dominatrix or a pro-dom, but you don't consider yourself that. You consider yourself a kink counselor. So tell me the differentiation there.
It's a good differentiation. And, you know, I don't use the term dominatrix only because for me, it's kind of comic booky. It's a personal identification issue. I don't run around in thigh high boots that often. what I do actually is a spectrum. So I've got, there are a few different angles to my work. As a counselor and as a consultant, I'm working with individuals, couples, and multi-partner relationships in either talk sort of consultation where we're sitting around and having a conversation in person or by teleconferencing about their history in kink, their sort of feelings or questions or curiosities about kink, and the way they can best manifest those in a healthy relationship. I also do hands-on instruction with the folks that I'm working with. So many times folks will have a good sense of what they want to do, but just not quite know how to do it safely in a way that's sort of technically proficient and actually helps you achieve the feeling you want to achieve. And then I absolutely do session play. I've absolutely sort of occupied the space that we would call more traditional pro-dom space. I think that I have a unique experience in that work in that I've often, I gravitate toward folks that are newer to SM, that are looking for a person to kind of shepherd their experience. And in fact, many of the couples that will work with me will then want to be able to do some sort of ritual engagement in an SM scene with me as one or more partners co-top as a way of kind of saying, okay, great, now here's how you're going to do it. So that would be the kind of full range of work that I get to do with the people I work with.
So there's some facilitating of people's own kind of personal growth from these various angles, it sounds like.
I think so. And, you know, I was describing it to someone I was working with earlier today that a lot of this is sort of like learning how to parallel park a stick shift uphill. Like if you can do it in that configuration, you can do it in a lot. So navigating sort of healthy, satisfying, kinky relationships is an advanced skill, I think. It requires you to be able to spin a lot of plates at once. But it is great for building relationship muscle. And I think folks that learn that style of communication are really set up to succeed in other styles, right? It trickles out to other aspects of relationship life.
I mean, I cannot agree with you more on this point, but I have to take a break. I'm going to give you my thoughts on that very thing because that raised a point that I really want to make. But we're going to hear from our fantastic sponsors first, including the wonderful Good Vibrations. Good Vibrations has been my presenting sponsor for more than a year. They are so supportive of the show, and you can show them love by being supportive of them. Go to goodvibes.com, use coupon code Tristan for 15% off your order. Coming up, I'm going to quiz you about where gender comes in and what it's like to top people who may experience various forms of discrimination in their real lives. And also, I want to find out some of your specialties. I mean, I know them, but I want everyone else to know them too. So stay with us. More with Morgana May when we return.
Streaming live, the leader in internet talk radio, VoiceAmerica.com.
Good Vibrations is the San Francisco Bay Area-based women-friendly retailer trusted for more than three decades to provide a comfortable, welcoming, and safe environment for quality sex toys, educational materials, and products that enhance and empower one's sex life. Good Vibrations offers its products at six retail locations in San Francisco, Berkeley, and Oakland, California, and in Brookline, Massachusetts, as well as online at www.goodvibes.com. Online ordering is discreet and trusted. We believe that pleasure is your birthright, and one of our highly trained staff members can help you choose the product that is perfect for you at 1-800-BUY-VIBE. Call us 7 days a week from 8 a.m. to 8 p.m. Pacific Time at 1-800-289-8423 or visit us online at www.goodvibes.com.
Ready to take your sex life to the next level? Let Tristan Taramino's award-winning Expert Guide Sex Education Series help. Each DVD is packed with honest information, explicit techniques, scorching sex scenes, authentic chemistry, and real female orgasms. Go to puckerup.com and use coupon code SEXOUTLOUD for 25% off your order.
You're tuned in to Sex Out Loud with your host, Tristan Taramino. We want to hear from you. If you have a question or comment, please send an email to Tristan at puckerup.com. That's Tristan at puckerup.com. Now back to the show.
Welcome back to Sex Out Loud, everyone. We're talking today with professional dominant and kink counselor, Morgana May. Also, we're live. So you can give us a call and ask us all your burning questions about BDSM, about kink, about kinky relationships, anything you want. And if we use your question, you're going to win a prize from Sportsheets, which, let me tell you, the feedback I get from all of you who win your prizes, you're very, very happy and satisfied with your Sportsheets prizes. No one has ever written me and be like, that prize sucked. They all just rave about them. So you should do that. 866-472-5788. 866-472-5788. Before the break, you were talking about negotiating kinky relationships and how it's really an advanced skill, but there's a way to do it in a really healthy way that gives you all these different kind of outlets. And the thing that resonated for me is that there are situations in my life where I'm working with someone or I'm interacting with someone who I don't even know. Like, this could be as simple, like I go into Staples and I'm looking for a particular stapler. Mm-hmm. And the person is like super mad and mean and sadistic about it to me.
And not in a good way.
And it's like, and I'm always a little bit like caught off guard because I'm like, we're just talking about like office supplies here and you do not need to bring that like kind of like power trip on me. But then I remember and I'm reminded that, you know, most of the people in my life work these power dynamics out in their sex lives. Right. And so they don't, it's like, it's not spilling over into these other areas. Mm. And so when someone seems to be coming like out of nowhere at me with a major power trip, all I can think is you don't have a way to harness this, engage it, play with it, explore it. You have no other space in your life to do it. So you're doing it here. And in this case with me, non-consensually.
Right? And about a stapler, for God's sake.
Right. Well,
and I think it speaks to this, this kind of broader truth that we are all in this world kind of working out something. We're all working through our stuff. Mm-hmm. My mom often says she's really happy that I found this career because, you know, I'm a really bossy person. And by getting to do this work, I have found really ethical, appropriate, humane ways of taking that bossiness that would probably make me an intolerable person if I didn't use it for good, not evil, and then have to find a way of doing it in a safe, sane, consensual, and risk-aware way. And so I would say it's like, it's power, it's our capacity for frustration tolerance, it's all of these, you know, kind of complex things around what's inside us and how we interact with others that we're getting to, yeah, really like develop some advanced skills around when we're negotiating who we're going to hang from the ceiling.
Yeah, I mean, I now approach these people who lay these big power trips on me with total compassion because I'm like, you don't know about BDSM. If you right. did, you would be an amazing dominant. Yeah, you could get that. You
or
could
an
work
amazing submissive.
You
I
could
say
work all this shit out. Yeah, well, that's true. Or switch. You could work all this shit out like in a really fun way with props and drama. But instead, here we are in aisle 8 doing it. it's just not as like satisfying in that way. You know, so I just want to like hand someone a flyer or something whenever that happens. So in one of your blogs, someone asked you about the difference between topping cisgendered men and women. And I want to quote you because you had this great, you had this very long response, but I'm just going to quote.
It's a very long response.
I know. I'm going to quote this little piece, which is you say, quote, "When I'm with a submissive man, my desire is to shrink him down so that his submission fits in my pocket. When I'm with a submissive woman, my desire is to build her up so that her submission fills the room." Mm. Very provocative statement. And I want to hear a little bit more about this, about what role gender plays in these sessions that you do.
Yeah, well, it's, you know, I have the great fortune of getting to play with a lot of different types of people, a lot of different orientations and expressions of folks, which might be a little non-traditional for my field. And I myself am queer identified and, you know, kind of came into SM playing with women, with cis women, with trans women, with queer and bisexual women, you know, like this, I'm kind of doing this nice big umbrella of like all these women that I've gotten to have great SM experiences with. And then playing professionally, I definitely notice the ways that gender sets us up socially in very profound ways as it relates to power exchange. And it's next to impossible to have these conversations, or maybe I'll frame this and say, I always struggle to have these conversations, as I think many people do, in a way that doesn't become really gender reductive or overdeterministic. Right. So I don't ever want to, you know, sort of get super binary with it. And I think that cisgender men, you know, men who are born as men and identify as men and have no trans experience, have a unique positioning in the world vis-a-vis power. And that trans men have a unique position in the world that can be really, like, you know, kind of developed and complex because they've had an embodied experience of trans misogyny. Trans women have had an embodied experience of trans misogyny, and cis women have had an embodied experience of misogyny, similar roots. And that navigating the world from that one down position sets your experience of discordant power up in a very different way. So my example for this is always that I have never had a person who was of sort of queer or trans experience. I've never had a cis woman come into me and say, "I just want you to do anything you want to me, and I don't want a safe word. I just like have such fantasies of totally giving up control." Right? These community groups tend to come to me and say, "Hey, I'm really interested in this. Let me interview you. Let me vet you. Let me figure out how you're safe and going to do what you say you're going to do. And here are the things that I need." Cis dudes, I've heard that from like literally hundreds of times in the course of the last 20 years.
Wow. I mean, this is fascinating.
Without ever, you know, and half the time it's, you know, clearly a kind of sexual entertainment for them. It's not actually a real request. But the vulnerability, the sort of, here's what it means for me to genuinely know what it's like to be unsafe in the world, radically changes the way we experience consensual pain and power exchange in a scene, I think.
And you say later in that same post, "My default when dominating people who experience any kind of social marginalization is to empower through submission." Yeah. And I think this is something that trips people up continuously, which is that when they think of submission, they think, oh, you mean you want to be walked all over or treated like a doormat or treated very badly. So explain what it means to either empower someone or help them empower themselves through submission.
Well, the best way I can describe it is, you know, A, I think submission is actually a very tough, strong position for me, particularly if you're playing on bottom with me, maybe, but I think there's great strength in giving yourself over. There's great strength in letting go that much. And the physical endurance, be it actual sort of masochistic expression or getting tied up or being nude in front of another person or putting yourself in any kind of like erotically embarrassing or vulnerable position, that takes guts. And I have a lot of respect for that. I don't think it's an easy thing to do. It's a brave thing to do. And so I like being able to make my subs and my bottoms feel good about what they've done. Even if in the moment it's a wonderful feeling of being totally knocked off center and a little embarrassed and kind of floating through space, when you're looking back on it, I want it to be the sense of like, damn, I did that. Like that was awesome. And you know, I think it's worth saying that that's my own shtick. Like, when I'm playing with other women, I never have the exact same kind of sadistic impulses that I have when I'm working with cis guys. And a part of that is that women are less interesting to hurt for me. And I think there are plenty of people who experience cultural marginalization who have awesome, deep fantasies of humiliation and degradation and heavy, heavy scenes that don't make them feel empowered at all. And they are cathartic and they foster a kind of wellness, and they're done in these like really, you know, thoughtful, consensual ways. And I think there's often a lot of stigma for folks who do experience those things. And I, you know, the easiest example of this would be for women. Often I'll hear submissive women talk about how they feel like second wave feminism set them up to feel like their fantasies were shameful and wrong. Mm. Because they, you know, if Gloria Steinem fought for anything, it was for the right for them to not be handcuffed to a bed. And that it's hard to admit to someone that they do have these deep fantasies of being used or being objectified, because women aren't supposed to want that. So, you know, it's more complex than just empowerment. Can look a lot of different ways, I suppose, is how I'm going to put that. But I personally understand, and I think most folks listening could understand where that line between erotic embarrassment and degradation is, and where that line between I'm really connected to my partner and it might involve heavy stages of use, but we're in it together, and I'm feeling hostile toward this person and I'm working something out on them. We know where that line is. We know the difference between those two states.
Well, yeah, and it seems to me, even if you're handcuffed to the bed, you've asked to be handcuffed to the bed, maybe begged. Mm-hmm. You might have the key to the handcuffs, or you really, really, really trust the person who does.
That's it.
Which seems entirely different than being handcuffed to the bed when you don't want to be handcuffed to the bed.
Right. Well, and it gets to the point I made previously, which is that I've rarely had people who are, negotiate an experience of marginalization in their day-to-day life come to me and just say, hey, handcuff me to the bed. There's always a conversation that happens beforehand. There's always like, I want you to understand what being handcuffed to the bed means to me. And I want to have a sense of like, how are we going to do this together? And how are you going to keep me safe?
This is just a fascinating idea that people not only bring their, you know, their own experiences, their own histories, of course, you know, into the space of playing, but that they might bring their own privileges too. That like the scale of fear and what might be terrifying to one person is not terrifying to another. And you kind of have to negotiate to figure out like where that is, because I'm assuming it's individual to every single person.
Absolutely. And that there's, I know often the kind of more mainstream cis white heterosexual guys that I adore playing with will be like, what are you talking about? and not quite get what this conversation is about. But the people I'm working with from queer and trans community, the like folks that I'm working with that this is important to them, are appreciative to get to hear this stuff laid out.
Okay, we're going to take another break.
Yes.
When we come back, we're going to talk about some of your own limits and some of the really taboo fantasies that you do a lot of work with. And then we're going to go right to questions, because we have so many questions on BDSM that we're going to have to kind of do like a double-sized Ask Tristan. So, and you people can call us and ask us even more questions or make comments or tell us about your kinky relationship or your kink fantasies or whatever. 866-472-5788. 866-472-5788. Don't go anywhere, people. It's just going to get kinkier.
The Internet's number one talk station. Number one talk station. VoiceAmerica.com.
Good Vibrations is the San Francisco Bay Area-based women-friendly retailer trusted for more than three decades to provide a comfortable, welcoming, and safe environment for quality sex toys, educational materials, and products that enhance and empower one's sex life. Good Vibrations offers its products at six retail locations in San Francisco, Berkeley, and Oakland, California, and in Brookline, Massachusetts, as well as online at www.goodvibes.com. Online ordering is discreet and trusted. We believe that pleasure is your birthright, and one of our highly trained staff members can help you choose the product that is perfect for you at 1-800-BUY-VIBE. Call us 7 days a week from 8 a.m. to 8 p.m. Pacific Time at 1-800-289-8423 or visit us online at www.goodvibes.com.
Sports Sheets is the sex toy company that's been keeping couples connected for over 20 years. Their fantasy restraint and sex toy products redefine sexual adventure. From bondage and sexual positioning to strap-ons and role play, Sports Sheets makes a toy for everyone's taste and budget. So go treat yourself to something from Sports Sheets, available wherever great sex products are sold.
Ready to take your sex life to the next level? Let Tristan Taramino's award-winning expert guide sex education series help. Each DVD is packed with honest information, explicit techniques, scorching sex scenes, authentic chemistry, and real female orgasms. Go to puckerup.com and use coupon code SEXOUTLOUD for 25% off your order.
You're tuned in to Sex Out Loud with your host, Tristan Taramino. We want to hear from you. If you have a question or comment, please send an email to Tristan at puckerup.com. That's Tristan at puckerup.com. Now back to the show.
Welcome back to Sex Out Loud. We are talking today with kink counselor, Dr. Morgana May. And we're live, so you can talk to us. Give us a call at 866-472-5788 or post a question on our Twitter feed at Sex Out Loud Radio. So I wanted to ask you a little bit about your own limits and boundaries, because I read that you don't do mistress slave play. You don't do slave anything.
I don't do slave anything.
Why
it's
not?
True. Well, it's because I have a difficult time stepping toward that terminology to mean anything other than its historical sort of connotations. And this is a me thing. I don't mean to disparage or poo-poo folks for whom that's really powerful and important language. As a white woman living at the, you know, as a white landed woman, like a home-owning person living in the United States at this time, I'm not able to grab that language and make it something that's for my kind of sex play. I have a little bit more singular purpose for it than that. So I use language like submission and servitude and service. And I reserve the use of the term slavery to describe the actual historical and sort of economic event that was that particular atrocity.
And we've had Molina Williams on. I just want to say, if people want to hear more about this and a different point of view on this, listen to the podcast with Molina Williams.
And she's amazing.
Yeah, she's
right?
Phenomenal.
Yeah. Yeah, that's it. And like I say, that's a personal experience, and that comes from my own experience and my own cultural position too, right? Mm-hmm. Which I think we all get to really embrace when we're doing kink. Often we think of kink as this kind of homogenous, well, if you're a top, it means you do this. And in fact, it's a space that invites us to step into it and then be really creative and express ourselves in the way that we want.
But you do, in fact, work with some pretty taboo kinks. One of your specialties is working with adult babies or diaper lovers, sometimes abbreviated AB/DL. I think this is one of the most misunderstood, ridiculed, and even feared fantasies. in the kink world. Do you agree with that?
I do. You know, I'll take people on tours of my play space in San Francisco, and folks will go through the leather dungeon rooms, and they'll see the, you know, isolation cell that's kind of, you know, welded into the hallway, and they'll be like, ooh, ah, and they'll get to Mother's room where there's the big plastic rumba panties and the giant bonnets and the supersized pacifiers, and everyone will squeak out. And that's the place where folks are like, ah, I can't handle it. Suspension hoist in the dungeon, no problem. Giant pacifier, suddenly people are freaking out.
Why? Why do you think?
I mean, I think it's a few things. I think we've got a totally appropriate cultural taboo around age play. And of course, people that have, you know, grown-ups that love age play are drawn to it for some very grown-up and very consensual reasons. But there's a kind of surface sense of like, okay, that's a little odd. I think diapering is a tremendous taboo. I think that there's a combination of regression, of embarrassment, of vulnerability, and it's also, you know, we haven't had the 50 Shades of diapering. It hasn't worked its way into the kind of vernacular. We don't have, you know, Madonna never made a book about diapering. And so we've had all these kind of great portrayals of more mainstream BDSM that I think is more familiar to folks. And the diaper lover, adult baby stuff is a little bit more like on the fringe.
You know, back in the 90s when I was writing my column for the Village Voice, I did a column on adult babies. And I managed, after lots and lots and lots of work, to get hooked up with one of the adult baby diapering communities in New York City. They can be very, very secretive, even within people who are kinky. They are hard to find, and they do not trust the media, as you could imagine. And so it took a lot of work. And, you know, I came away from that experience really, I don't know, just like having a deeper understanding of like what they were into and why they were into it. And it didn't seem at all strange. Like after knowing them and talking to them, it's like, right, this is how some people talk about rope. And this is how some people talk about wax. And this is how some people talk about blindfolds. Like it just, it really gave me a whole new perspective on that entire segment of the kink community.
It's sensation play and it's trust and it's erotic embarrassment. And you know, in the past, like 10 years, maybe especially in the past 5, I've been really delighted to see how much more ABDL communities have gotten to step toward their own. So nationally, the number of ABDL munches that occur has greatly increased. There's conferences that happen. There's, you know, age play. And then also within the age play, like CapCon and TeddyCon, there's a wonderful podcast, the Big Little Podcast, that talks just about age regression and ABDL concerns. And these are smart, fun, kinky folks that are kind of in love with their expression of kink in a way that's not dissimilar, like you say, to the rope or the body bag or the good over the knee spanking. I will say, you know, it's a specific fetish, and it's not one that I'm just like, awesome, everyone in a diaper. And I got a very sweet email today from someone who is, you know, very interested in doing a piece of work with me and had to sort of say, well, I'm not interested in one thing I know you really love. And I knew that to mean he didn't want me to put him in a diaper. And I would not put a person in a diaper who was not specifically looking for that. It is its own kind of unique fetish, and you know, it's a style of play I want to do with a person who's equally interested in being in it, for folks that might be concerned that all of a sudden they're, you know, they're if they talk it with their partner at any point about pacifiers and bottles, that's going to show up.
right. Okay, well, I want to get right to our questions. And remember, if you hear your question on the air, you're going to win a prize from Sport Sheets.
This is a good deal. I wish I could send in
questions. This is a very good deal. Now, first of all, this comes from Jamie on Twitter, who says, what is your strangest or funniest story about miscommunication or a flubbed safe word during a scene? Well, let's define safe word, and then and then you can answer.
So a safe word is a mutually agreed upon word, code, or sign that is a submissive's way of letting the dominant or top know that they need to take a break or they need an activity to stop. And so kind of traditionally, safe words are words that you would not hear in the course of play, right? Like window pane or giraffe, or like red light or mercy, which is this kind of very sweet way of maintaining a power exchange dynamic while still letting a person know this needs to happen. I'm a big proponent of no being a safe word for folks who need no to mean no. But it's just whatever we sort of set up beforehand to say, here's what's going to happen. If someone's got a ball gag in their mouth, that might be a particular sound that they wouldn't make otherwise. Sometimes submissives will be asked to hold a bell or a clicker, but it's a way of being able to articulate a limit or a boundary in the course of playing.
And so do you have a funny story for us about either miscommunicating or a safe word?
You know, I have awesome sex, kinky sex disaster stories, to be sure. And I don't have any safe word stories. I do have a hilarious negotiation story, which was that a while back, I was working with a wonderful French couple, and the woman was describing to me her husband's sort of submissive proclivity, and she was describing his extraordinary devotion, and she mentioned that he was a eunuch, and that there were these other ways that he served her. And in my mind, I was like, well, that's fascinating. I never hear, that's a very old-fashioned word to describe someone who I'm assuming is in chastity. So I was asking my follow-up questions. So it sounds like we're not going to get to do any genital torture because are you saying that this person is in chastity? And she was like, oh, God, no, I would never do that. He's not in chastity. So I thought, all right, I'm hearing this the wrong way. Maybe it means that he's chaste. And as we were playing, I heard her use this word a couple of times, and I realized she was referring to toys in the room and that they weren't a eunuch, they were unique. Because she was.
Oh!
I was like, ah, and I stopped her and I was like, I just have to let you know this very funny way I misheard you.
Unique.
Right, right. Not eunuch.
Not eunuch. Very, very, very different words, by the way. Like, yeah. Not a lot of overlap there. Okay, that's good.
I think it goes to prove, just always ask the question right then. Don't smile and nod. Ask, what
ask
do you
the
mean?
Question.
Exactly.
Yeah. Okay, this one, you know, all of these are pretty intense. So they came by email. People gave me their first names. We're just going to read them anonymously. I think that's best because some of them are very detailed.
Got it.
Okay, this person says, I'm 27 and marrying my wife in a few short months. We've been together since high school, and as much as I love her, we have not been as kinky as I had hoped. I know I'm more kinky than her, and I want to do more things with her like BDSM or pegging, and she tells me she's not up to it now, but maybe later. So I wanted to start out with maybe some role-playing outfits, because for me, it's all about the visuals and what she's wearing before sex that will get me going, and it doesn't even have to be that elaborate, just everyday clothes worn sexier. Like, and then he gives these great examples of like, a baseball cap, hoop earrings, fake glasses, leotard with leg warmers, very specific. Okay.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Anyway, I tell her what I want and I kind of give her these different ideas about costumes and she gives me this face like I'm pressuring her and she tells me one step at a time. I love her deeply and this is not a deal breaker, but sometimes I feel like I can never tell her my fantasies because I know they'll be pushed back and I might never experience them. Mm. Help me. Am I doing something wrong? What should I do?
It's a great question. It's a great question. So my first thought is, as I was listening to this example of how we tell our partners, these are the things that I'm interested in, right? My friend and colleague, Charlie Glickman, has this really great food analogy he uses for sex, and I always like to credit him. Sex is one of the few things that we negotiate with our partners in a way that we tend to do totally passively and non-verbally. So if you think about the analogy of food, if we're going out to dinner with our partner, we don't walk down the street and kind of walk past the sushi place and then walk past the like pizza place and then body check our partner into the taqueria and say, hey, I feel like a burrito, right?
Right.
We have a conversation. What do you feel like having for dinner tonight? You want some sushi? No. How about some pizza? I don't think so. You want to go get a burrito? And we go back and forth and it's a very like strategic conversation. And I think what often happens when we're trying to communicate our sexual desires is that, A, we do so fairly passively, or we do so by trying to suggest things or bringing things in from the side door or the back door, which is often perceived of as being kind of pressuring, which is why you get the side eye from your partner, because they're like, why are you, you know, you put the Catholic schoolgirl uniform on the bed again, but I'm not feeling like I want to wear that, so now I'm just feeling pressured. And also we can feel, I'm not saying this is what's going on for this particular writer, but we can feel often a sort of internal shame or an internal sense of the thing I want isn't okay, or it's a problem to be asking for it. And we communicate our sense of our desires being problematic along with our request. So then, of course, our partner hears, yeah, you want this thing that's kind of like, not, you don't need to have it, and it's not like a thing that's super important to you, and it's really not okay, but you'd like it if I did it. Like, I'm not, that's not a sales pitch. I'm not feeling like I really want to engage in that. So I think that it can be very important and very useful to, at a time when you are not expecting the play to happen, freed from the sort of, I'm going to ask you about this thing because I want to do it right now. In the middle of, you know, like your weekend afternoon doing another sort of thing, be able to have the, I want to be able to talk with you about something. Is this an okay time to check in with you? And make sure, like, all right, this is a good time. If it's not, like, can we actually set a date? Can we talk tomorrow at breakfast? Can we talk tomorrow at lunch? And then be able to say in these kind of direct and calm ways going down at the end of the sentence, I've got some desires that I really would like to be able to talk with you about. They're important to me. And I'm not saying we have to do them. I'm wondering if you would step toward me so we could have a conversation about just where we're at and just have things on the table.
Great, great advice. Okay, well, we're going to leave you with that little piece and let you know that coming up, we're going to do more questions, and it's your last chance to talk to us. Can you just feel the depth of her experience and her knowledge? Like, seriously, if you have a question, you should really call us. 866-472-5788. But if you're feeling shy, you can just keep listening, because more questions and more kink is coming up.
Stimulating talk.
It gets those synapses in your brain firing really fast.
All the time. The number one internet talk station where your opinion counts. VoiceAmerica.com.
Good Vibrations is the San Francisco Bay Area-based women-friendly retailer trusted for more than three decades to provide a comfortable, welcoming, and safe environment for quality sex toys, educational materials, and products that enhance and empower one's sex life. Good Vibrations offers its products at six retail locations in San Francisco, Berkeley, and Oakland, California, and in Brookline, Massachusetts, as well as online at www.goodvibes.com. Online ordering is discreet and trusted. We believe that pleasure is your birthright, and one of our highly trained staff members can help you choose the product that is perfect for you at 1-800-BUY-VIBE. Call us 7 days a week from 8 a.m. to 8 p.m. Pacific Time at 1-800-289-8423 or visit us online at www.goodvibes.com.
Ready to take your sex life to the next level? Let Tristan Taramino's award-winning expert guide sex education series help. Each DVD is packed with honest information, explicit techniques, scorching sex scenes, authentic chemistry, and real female orgasms. Go to puckerup.com and use coupon code SEXOUTLOUD for 25% off your order.
You're tuned in to Sex Out Loud with your host, Tristan Taramino. We want to hear from you. If you have a question or comment, please send an email to Tristan at puckerup.com. That's Tristan at puckerup.com. Now back to the show.
Welcome back to Sex Out Loud. I'm talking today with professional dominant and kink counselor Morgana May. And we're live and we're taking your questions, but only for a few more minutes. And I already have this kind of backlog of questions that you've sent me by email. I don't know where the time goes.
So fast.
Okay, our next question is, dear Tristan, we both enjoy, my partner and I enjoy anal sex, pegging, and some mild bondage. We aren't really into pain very much. The problem we run into is that we are both more submissive than not. We take turns being the dom, sometimes switching during the same session. It doesn't come naturally to either one of us. It's a bit of a chore to me, and she, my partner, has difficulty being confident and assertive. I want her to feel comfortable being in charge, and I want to find a way to enjoy it more myself. Do you recommend any books or advice for new and aspiring dominants?
Excellent. I love that question. And, you know, the two bottom household, I think, is the most common configuration that I work with. And, you know, who can blame you? Because it's awesome to be playing on bottom. And of course, you would want these things, you know, sort of done to and with you. There's a few things that I think about. One is when we're seeking out a kind of top or dominant orientation, have a little bit of expansiveness and appreciating that this is going to be more than one thing, and that the style that might feel like a lot of work or that doesn't really resonate with you is a style you should not step toward. I often recommend that folks look at kinky materials that can be inspiring to them and try to mimic or imitate the character or the role of the person that they like. And we're living in an era right now with some sort of really spectacular options in terms of like kinky erotic material and kinky stuff to look at. I think it's also nice to be able to settle into knowing you don't have to necessarily be a dom to be confident that you're giving your partner the thing that they want. And this is where tapping into your kind of compersion for your partner is really great. So this is, we're going to like give a little $10 word here. Compersion being this kind of beautiful state of deriving a sense of pleasure or enjoyment from providing your partner with pleasure or your partner receiving pleasure from something. So a lot of folks that like to be on bottom can really tap into a service orientation. So can you tap further into that service orientation to start doing something for the person who's on bottom in a way that isn't necessarily about topping them in a kind of stereotypic way, but about just deeply meditating on the intensity of the sensation that you're providing? Maybe sort of empathizing with that sensation, thinking about how hot it would be to be there yourself, and getting to have a kind of mutual meditation on, you know, bondage and pegging. That's a pretty awesome way to spend an evening. And then, you know, I can certainly recommend, and this is a self-serving recommendation, but this is where I think bringing in a third can be really useful. And professional spaces are especially great for this because they're boundaried and they're clean. And like, I am here to really work with my client's relationship, right? Like the relationship is who I am in service to in a lot of ways. And so it can be wonderfully inspiring for a top to get to see another top, to co-top with someone, to learn a new trick or two, to step into their confidence and into their entitlement. I mean, this is a hour-long consultation right here, right? All the ways that we step into dominant yes, entitlement yes. and all the ways as bottoms that we are really great bottoms and make it easy for our partners to top us and really are like encouraging and great and not kind of, you know, looking like we're keeping a scorecard as they're trying to do stuff. But those would be my kind of initial suggestions.
Great. Great. Okay, well, I dug this one out of the vault. It's a question I got probably more than a year ago, and I've asked more than one person on the show. No, I've asked one person on the show to address it, but I think it deserves another look or another point of view. So this person, Nicholas, writes to me and is asking about BDSM. And mm-hmm. he's concerned that like people who do it have, quote, issues, mm-hmm. and that if one person hits another person spiritually, doesn't it create negative energy for both people? And doesn't it mean that the person who's on the bottom has low self-esteem or doesn't love themselves? And so I'm going to just read the conclusion. It's very hard for me to believe that spiritually all this behavior is good for the soul. Mm-hmm. Louise Hay tries her best to make us all understand how negative words and sayings can be, and that we have to watch how we express ourselves so that negative phrases don't become our affirmations. If words have so much power, don't actions have that power also? And then at the end of it, this person goes on to say that actually they have fantasies of being degraded, humiliated, slapped, and it makes me feel very ashamed to have these fantasies. I believe that these fantasies fill me up with negative energy and cause problems to me. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So I just wanted to summarize it because it was a very long letter. But what are your thoughts about this? That like spiritually we're messing ourselves up if we're playing these power games?
Well, I mean, I think that I'm going to broaden this notion of spiritual because I know that there are plenty of folks that don't actually organize their kind of experience in that way. But like on a spiritual level, on the level of wellness, on the, you know, level of kind of like living your best life, there is lots and lots in this world that can be toxic and undo you and prevent you from being in an optimal state of wellness. BDSM could easily be one of those things. Vanilla sex could be one of those things. The job you work could be one of those things. And I think of that as being much more a matter of context than behavior. So just about any behavior I can think of could be done in a way that fostered wellness, and it could be done in a way that fostered harm to self or others. And it's not about the action. And this is what sex negative culture teaches us, is that there are actions that are inherently good and inherently deviant, pathological, or bad. And that there are behaviors that are healthy and behaviors that are unhealthy, right? And so we're taught that heterosexual, procreative, missionary position sex is a normal way to have sex, and that when you are kinky, we're having abnormal sex. I'd be more interested in being able to look at the context in which actions are happening. So when I'm playing in my dungeon, while the actions that I'm doing are hitting someone, right? I might smack someone's bottom or face or back or chest or inner thighs with my hand. That is a qualitatively different form of impact than if I were to get in a fist fight on the street. It's a very apples and oranges kind of thing. And that's context that's doing that. So we can look at our behaviors on the scale of, is this consensual? Is this being done in a safe, sane, and consensual and risk-aware way? Is this free from the interference of drugs and alcohol? Are we within our capacity to make these decisions? Are both parties involved in this exchange empowered enough to consent and make decisions? That means there's no vast age discrepancy. There's no vast power differential, you know, in terms of this is a person who has institutional power over me and I can't say no. And then I think we get into this matter of our internalized shame states. And internalized shame states are, I like to think of them as a way that we get communication from our psyche about things that need tending and caring for. So a desire to be degraded or humiliated is a fairly common sexual desire. It's not actually one that needs to be acted on, but it is one that you can investigate what's the nature of my shame and discomfort around that. And that's where seeking out a consultant or a counselor or an outside source can help bring some more resources to that question.
Yeah, it's a really complex one, but I really appreciate your perspective on it. I appreciate you spending this hour with me. I can't believe it's over already.
It goes by so quickly, but it was a pleasure to be here.
But it is. Okay. Dr. Morgana May is a professional dominant counselor and human sexuality consultant. Go to her website to find out more, mistressmorgana.com. Follow her on Twitter at Morgana May, and May has an E at the end. All of these links and more can be found at sexoutloudradio.com. Click on the link for episode resources. I want to thank everyone who makes this show possible. Executive producer Karen Dana, associate producer Raymond Johnson, segment producer and editor Colton, announcer Cooper Beckett from Life on the Swing Set, Matt, my engineer, my devoted, talented, amazing engineer, and everyone at Voice America. If you missed any part of this show or you want to hear it again, you can listen on demand or download the MP3 by going to voiceamerica.com and searching for Sex Out Loud. You can also subscribe to it as a podcast on iTunes. Tune in next Friday, 5 p.m. Pacific, 8 p.m. Eastern, when my guest will be writer, publisher, and storyteller S. Bear Bergman. We're going to talk all about the trans state of the union and why it's important to have trans, gender-independent, and genderqueer kids represented in books. Until then, I encourage you to keep the discussion going on Facebook.com/AskTristan, on Twitter at SexOutLoudRadio, and in your own life. Take some time to talk about sex out loud.
That's a wrap on today's show. Go to VoiceAmerica.com to listen to this and other episodes on demand or as podcasts. And make sure you come back next Friday night at 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 Pacific, for Sex Out Loud with Tristan Taramino on Voice America Variety.
Sex Out Loud is brought to you by Good Vibrations, creating a buzz since 1977.